the cinematography, the editing techniques. Though I must say, the villain was a bit over the top.
A group of overweight children at a summer weight loss camp fight back against their new nasty head counselor. This week, we talk about the basics of videotape making, the wrong kind of bankruptcy, and why eating pasta isn't the best way to slim down. Then we find out if 1995's Heavyweight stands the test of time.
It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says Gladiator with a glut. Alan says as a father, blah blah. It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say. Love still hold up today. Test of time, James and Alan have to say. Do the movies you love still hold up today?
Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. This is the Test of Time. I am James Brief, and joining me is my buddy, Alan Noah.
That's me, I'm Alan Noah. How are you doing today, James?
I'm doing very well.
Good, I'm glad that you're doing well.
You know, Nintendo is actually returning to the movies. There's apparently going to be a new Mario animated film. I believe it's from the Minions, that studio. Imation or something.
Illumination?
Illumination, yeah. I think it's them. And what's also interesting is that they are going into the another big part following just like Disney. You know, I used to think that the only thing to do in Orlando was Disney. But then Universal Studios was able to score that Harry Potter world.
Right.
You took your kids, right?
Yeah. And it's amazing. And yeah, now Universal has the rights to a lot of Nintendo IP, and they are going to open one in Orlando in 2023. It's actually coming to the Universal in Tokyo this year in 2020 in time for the Olympics. So that'll give us a preview of what's coming to Orlando. Personally, more excited about Orlando because I'll probably get there before I go to Tokyo. And honestly, I would love to go to Tokyo at some point. But if I go to Tokyo, I'm not going to a theme park. I would like to explore the local culture. But Universal announced a new park that is going to be opening in 2023, Epic Universe. They haven't really announced a lot of things that are going to be in this park. Presumably another Harry Potter themed section and the Super Nintendo world. It should be awesome. I mean, Universal really knows what they're doing with creating an immersive land. And there was some talk about how you're going to be able to like collect coins at the one in Japan. There'll probably be a Mario Kart themed attraction. There could be a Donkey Kong and maybe a Legend of Zelda. There could be all kinds of really cool stuff at this park.
Yeah, and the great thing about the IP is there's no real story. Even if Nintendo were to one day come out with like a clunker Mario game, it can't kill the franchise. Like the Star Fox ride that they're going to have, there'll be references to some of the games for like the real big fans. But for everyone else, it's a space game. And then there'll be some garden for Pikmin and Pokemon will be all around the park. It'll just be fun. I feel like Nintendo's a real safe bet.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a reason to go to this new park. And Universal, they've got two amusement parks right now and a water park, which is pretty cool. Like all three of their parks are good. And there's definite potential for this park to be pretty interesting. And the sheer fact that there's going to be a Nintendo world, yeah, I'm going.
I'm in that weird Disney World limbo that I'm not a kid and I don't have kids. So there's no real draw for me to go to Disney World until someday I can bring some kids or something. But yeah, I would go to that. If I had a conference in Orlando, I would be like, I want to check out Nintendo World. I want to see what it's like.
If you do go, obviously check out all the Harry Potter stuff, which is amazing. Also, check out Springfield, USA at Universal Studios. The Simpsons area, definitely worth checking out if you're a Simpsons fan. I had a blast in that land.
I heard they finally took away the Back to the Future ride.
The Simpsons ride is the Back to the Future ride. They just reskinned it.
That's funny.
Even like down to the motions. Like they didn't even reprogram it. Like if you went like back into the left in the Back to the Future ride, you go back into the left at that moment in the Simpsons ride.
That just shows they can reskin it now for the next 100 years.
Exactly.
This film that we're going to discuss this week, Heavyweights, you know, at the time in the 90s, there's a lot of these films going on. This is your typical 90s underdog sports film. The same year this comes out was a movie called The Big Green, The Mighty Ducks, and The Little Big League, Little Giants, kid movies where they suck and then they're good at the end. The twist here is that this is a movie about a group of preteen boys, the same as all those other films, but in this film, they're all heavier young men, and they all attend a weight loss camp over the summer. At first, everything's going great under the care of the beloved elderly camp owners, but things take a turn for the worse as the crazy Tony Perkins, played by Ben Stiller, when he takes over the camp. The campers go from having a great fun, now they're going on 20-mile hikes without food. It's not a good time. But in the end, the kids take over the camp and even find time to prove their own worth against a sports camp across the lake.
And they're evil. The camp across the lake is always evil.
Yeah, we'll certainly get to that too. It was an odd characteristic of this camp.
And this movie came out 25 years ago. I think we're a little bit past the anniversary, but how did it do at the box office? I don't really remember this movie coming out.
It did okay. The film, it had an $8 million budget, as you would expect this film to have. You know, low budget, high single digits. And it opened at number 3 with $6.5 million. Number one film that week was, there was a big fad in the mid-90s to remake 70s and earlier television shows into movies. That this one was number one. This was a big hit.
In 1995.
Yeah.
I don't know. Give me a little bit more of a hint.
Okay. The most famous scene in the television show is when the main character gets hit in the nose with a football. The main girl character.
Oh, Brady Bunch.
Yes. Marsha gets hit with a football. The film wound up making a $17 million domestic. And so it doubled the budget and, you know, probably profitable for the producers, you know, a couple million. And it's on Disney Plus now. I'm guessing all these boys that are, you know, all our age, probably the checks that they were getting for 15 cents, like since Disney Plus came on, have increased to like $1.40 that they get every, you know, twice a year.
Yay. Good for them.
Yeah. The opening of this film. This is one of the happiest songs in the 90s. And Al, how does this song go again?
Oh, well, it goes, everybody wants to live
like they wanna live.
And everybody wants to love
like they wanna love.
Everybody wants to be closer to free.
Wah, 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 wah.
When you were a kid, did you change it to everybody wants to be closer to me?
No, but I thought the lyrics were, I said everybody one, everybody two, everybody three. I thought that's what it said.
Wait, really? It's so obvious. It goes one, two, three. It's like a joke.
I didn't get the joke. I thought it was obvious it was free. And then at that point in the song, they actually do a joke on top. You don't know comedy, Al.
No, you don't know comedy. That's clearly a gag. It's a goofy song. It's the last day of school. There's basically a riot at this school. Yeah. They're like, not just like throwing papers like into like the garbage can. They're like throwing them everywhere. There's two kids making out that like the main character walks by. The boy has like an epic mullet, like longer hair than the girl he's making out with.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely supposed to be like this is a party because it's the last day of school. They kind of went a little over the top, though.
You're right. It's a little over the top. But I'd forgotten about this thing that people used to wear and put stickers on their guitar that said, mean people suck. Do you remember that slogan?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, yeah. It's true. That slogan stands the test of time. 25 years later, mean people still suck.
Yeah.
So we have our main character, Gerald. We follow him home, and his parents are there waiting for him to get home with some other guy who's there to talk about this new camp that they want him to go to. The guy who's there from the camp is played by Tim Blake Nelson. You said that you didn't watch Watchmen on HBO, right?
No, I haven't seen that.
Well, one, you should, because it was probably one of, if not the best shows of 2019. But Tim Blake Nelson is in that show. He plays a very serious character on that show. And just seeing him here as kind of like a goofy camp salesman kind of just made me smile. But they show the kid this videotape of like all the cool things there are at the camp. And there's one line where the guy says, "We've been doing this for over 30 years. Won't you come join us for year 33? And all I could think about was like, oh, why do they put the number in there? That means they have to make a new version of this tape every year. It would be so much easier to just say, we've been doing this for over 30 years. Then you only have to update it every 10 years. That's just videotape making 101. I mean, really.
I did not think of that. But it's one of those, and you taught me this, it's called, what's it called, like a flash take or something, because Gerald, or they call him Jerry, he goes, "Oh no, no way am I going, no way am I going," and then it immediately cuts to a plane taking off.
That's a smash cut.
Smash cut, yes, yes, yes. Jerry is played by this actor named Aaron Schwartz, and Aaron Schwartz was in some 90s films. There's a couple Mighty Ducks people in this film.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Aaron Schwartz was in the first Mighty Ducks film. There's Sean Weiss, who is in all three Mighty Ducks films. He's Goldberg, the goalie. And then while he's on the airplane, he meets another guy who is in Mighty Ducks 2 and 3. And I would say he's been acting for 20 years. Now, he's an absolute natural. And I'm talking about Kenan Thompson.
Yes, I did not know that he was in this movie. And when he popped up, I was like, hey, it's Kenan.
For the most part, I think the child acting is fine. But Kenan Thompson is so comfortable. He has like confidence at like 13 to act like that. I thought it was pretty commendable.
Yes. There's also another famous face when you get to the camp. One of the counselors, his name is Tim, and he's played by Paul Feig, the director.
Right. And there's even a very small part, a guy named Homer in this film, played by Judd Apatow. And Paul Feig and Judd Apatow, famously, they would first do Freaks and Geeks. And I was wondering, did they meet on this set? Because Sean Weiss, he's in the pilot and a couple of the episodes of Freaks and Geeks. And, you know, I'm wondering if this is the beginning of everything. And if I'm not mistaken, Ben Stiller, he has a very memorable cameo in one of the later episodes of Freaks and Geeks.
Maybe. It's been a while since I watched
that
show.
He does, and that this has to be where they know him from.
Well, and also Judd Apatow wrote this movie. He wasn't just in it. He co-wrote this movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. And when they first get to camp, the kids are having the time of their life. There's this counselor, Pat, played by the actor Tom McGowan. He popped up in a lot of stuff. He was in Frasier, and they're having a great time. There's this thing called the Blob, and the Blob is essentially a huge inflatable mat that when these big kids, when they jump on the Blob, some kid that's sitting on part of it will be blown off of the float.
Catapulted.
Exactly. I mentioned a couple times that I work at a sleepaway camp every summer.
Is it a weight loss camp?
No, it is a regular, just a, you know, sleepaway camp. There is a weight loss camp on the drive back. There's a lot of camps in that part of Pennsylvania, and they don't call it like fat or weight loss camp. It's something like
fitness camp,
something like culinary fitness education camp or something like that. It has a really euphemism name. But we have one of the blobs at our camp, and it's really fun.
It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And the point of this camp, though, is that it is a weight loss camp. I mean, Gerald's parents are sending him there to lose weight, and the kids have all of this candy and beef jerky and junk food that they like stash in their bunk. They've all figured out a way to smuggle it in, like it's strapped to their bodies and stuff, and they hide it all around the bunk. And obviously, that's not good because they're supposed to be losing weight. And like the amount of sugar in this bunk is like not normal or healthy for anyone to eat. Even an adult like shouldn't be eating that much junk food over the course of one summer.
No, I will say, though, that beef jerky, other than being very salty, it's very low calories.
And a good source of protein.
Yeah, but did you happen to notice anything about this group of kids that go to a weight loss camp?
What, that they're not all that huge?
Yes. There are certainly a couple kids that are. But even as a pediatrician, there's a couple kids here. There's no way I would have sent some of those kids like, you need to send this child away. You know, we're coming to the point where we need to have someone outside control what his caloric intake is for 8 weeks. And maybe it's that the country's gone up relatively, but these kids at most were a little husky.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that is a totally valid point. And I do think it is because we as a nation have only gotten much, much fatter in the 25 years since this movie came out. I mean, there are children who are heavy and overweight. And I mean, you can easily read up online about childhood obesity is a major problem in this country. And yeah, the kids in this movie seem a little big.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm a pediatrician. I unfortunately have to deal with like telling 12-year-old's parents, like, your kid is having signs of diabetes. You know, that's the reality today. My point is that there were a couple kids that were certainly big, but some of them were just a little bit husky.
Right.
But anyway, they're having a great time of their life and they're not losing any weight, nor should they be losing weight. Forget the food that they're sneaking in. They don't seem to be doing any exercise. As fun as the blob is, it's not exercise.
No, it's not. But very quickly, we see that the owner of the camp, or its owners, I should say, they are an older couple, Jerry Stiller, and I never know how to pronounce her name.
Oh, I don't know, but it's his real-life wife.
Yeah, and
Mira.
They had to sell the camp because they went into Chapter 9 bankruptcy, which just stuck out at me because everybody knows Chapter 11. Just say Chapter 11. Why would you change it from Chapter 11 to Chapter 9? I happened to Google it because I was curious. Do you know what Chapter 9 bankruptcy is?
No, but I just heard that the Fairway supermarkets are filing for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. So I thought the same thing just this week. I'm like, bankruptcy is Chapter 11.
Right. Chapter 9 bankruptcy is for municipalities. I mean, that's some useless information that I found out today, so now you have it too. But like, yeah, this isn't a municipality. Why did they just say Chapter 11? I don't know. I'm clearly overthinking it. But they sell the camp to this guy named Tony Perkis, who is played by Ben Stiller, and he is not a nice guy. He's never been around kids. He has a line where he's like, I'm looking forward to interacting with children for the first time ever. And this is Ben Stiller in full-on villain mode. I think it's fair to say he's in overacting mode as well.
Well, I think the easiest way to describe this is if you've never seen this film, but you have seen the film Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story, Ben Stiller recycles this character in Dodgeball.
Oh, I 100% agree with that statement. It is the exact same over-the-top caricature of a person.
Yeah, this is White Goodman. He's the leader of Globo Gym. And to his credit, I don't think he's ripping it off. I think this character is very funny. And while it made the producers a small profit, I don't think anyone saw this. And I think Ben Stiller knew he had a funny character on his head.
But, I mean, he starts, like, really cracking down on the kids. He finds their stash of all the junk food, and he gets rid of all of it. And, you know, you can understand from the kids' point of view why that's a bad thing. But if the parents of these kids paid money for them to go to this camp to lose weight, he is completely justified in raiding that cabin, finding the junk food, and throwing it all away.
I completely agree with you, Al. The Ben Stiller character, Tony Perkis, he's completely in his right. All the stuff that changes, and I think we're actually supposed to immediately disagree with all this stuff, but I totally agreed with him getting rid of that junk food. I'm at a camp that I will give the kids candy at camp, but these kids are not there to lose weight.
Right. He starts them on an exercise regimen. I'm kind of thinking, okay, yeah, these kids probably should be doing exercise, and not even just because they're overweight. I mean, all kids should be doing some exercise at summer camp. And obviously in this movie, the exercise that they're doing is like extra ridiculous. And it's a gag where they're like sliding back and forth on these mats and no one can do it. And they're toppling over.
Well, you don't remember that? That was a real 90s exercise fad. I don't remember what it's called, but it was like the slider size or something. And it was a plexiglass. It looked kind of like a surfboard, and you slid from one side of this very slippery plexiglass to the other, and there was a little bumper on each side so you wouldn't fly off. But yes, it was kind of like the Thighmaster of the 90s. It was one of these fad things there.
Oh, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, and I think the Perkins character is really interesting and funny and zany for the right reasons. But they don't give a good reason for him turning like evil. There's this guy that kind of looks like Trey Parker, the director of South Park. If you've ever seen Basketball or anything like that, the cameraman that kind of looks like him.
Well, we've seen him in other movies before. You don't recognize that guy?
I recognize him. Where have we seen him?
Waterboy and like every Adam Sandler movie ever.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He looks familiar like that. And this guy he's following Tony around, and there's no real reason why Tony just turns evil here. Because like we were saying, I agree with everything he's doing at first. But then he decides to just destroy the blob and then take the engines out of the go-karts. Like, it's a weird thing. I feel like a go-kart at a weight loss camp would be like, winner of this gets to drive a go-kart. Like, you know, it seems like a fun reward. The blob can be fun. I just didn't really get why he did it unless he got rid of the blob to put in swimming lanes. Like, that would be a stupid idea, but at least it would make sense. I didn't get why Tony turned so evil.
I mean, the answer is that there is no reason.
Right.
It is just because he is a cartoonish villain. The way they sort of color it is that he's frustrated and disappointed and he doesn't want to fail and he wants to market this program, and that's why he has a cameraman following him, but he can't market it as a effective weight loss technique if the kids aren't losing any weight. So then he starts starving the kids, which obviously is not an effective way to get people to lose weight. And there's this competition with the camp across the lake, Camp MVP, and they destroy these kids, and they're very sad. There's a little kind of sweet moment where they have a dance with this girls' camp, and, you know, it's the typical cliche thing where the boys are on one side and the girls are on the other side.
That's true, though, not just cliche. That happened to your dances, right?
Yeah, sure. But then, like, the nice counselor is like, hey, I'm going to go out there and make a fool out of myself. And then the cute nurse who works at the camp who kind of likes him, she goes out there and makes an idiot of herself, too. And then all the kids start dancing. And I thought that scene was really kind of sweet because you might expect that the girls are going to be mean to the kids and say, I'm not going to dance with them because they're fat or something like that. But the girls dance with the boys. They're very happy together. It's really sweet. But then Tony comes in and he has to like ruin everything and pull the plug on the party. He just gets like worse. He gets nastier. He takes him on this like extreme hike. Did they say 20 miles? Like
20 mile hike with no food and water or something. Maybe no food.
I mean, that's like manslaughter, negligent homicide. I mean, like you're going to kill a kid. Like you have to bring water. You have to bring protein. No cheeseburgers on the hike. Sure. I support that, but you got to have some kind of food. Also, don't start at 20 miles. You know, start at 2 miles and work your way up.
I mean, just 20 miles. I mean, a mile hiking is going to be, you know, a half hour. And for these kids, you know, and you're 20 to 10 hour. Like, I did like, there was one line that Tony says on the announcements. He goes, all right, campers, lunch has been canceled due to lack of hustle. I thought that was a funny line.
That is a good line. But yeah, it's on this hike where the kids just like openly rebel. And there's one of Tony's henchmen is a guy named Lars who has like the, you know, the over the top German accent. But like they tie him up, they capture Tony and they tie him up. There's this whole gag where they like tie him up and put honey on them. And they're like, oh, the bears are going to get you. And then I was like, okay, Tony with the 20-mile hike, that could have killed these kids. If there's bears in this woods, then they could kill these counselors. There's a lot of, like, almost murder happening here, which I think is weird in a Disney movie. But then they're like, no, 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 there are no bears. We're just kidding. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's lighthearted ribbing that they're doing to these counselors. But then one of them just, like, runs over and punches Lars in the crotch. You know, haha, got you.
Yeah, I didn't think the bears were a problem, but the bugs in the woods in July, that's going to be terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a cool thing.
Yeah, but the kids take over. They've captured Tony and they've tied him up and put him in like a cage area. To their credit, when they tell the counselors are like, you know, they think Tony's insane, but they're like, kids, like, no, like, we have to let him go. I was glad it wasn't complete anarchy, but then Tony should have kept his mouth shut and the counselors would have, you know, untied him. But he's like, yeah, I'm going to fire all of you and you too, you stupid counselors too. So then they're like, eh, we'll keep him tied up.
Yeah, that's still not enough motivation to keep another grown man prisoner in, like, an electrified cage. Like, I get it from the point of view of, okay, it's a Disney movie, but, like, if he's responsible enough to say, yeah, I don't like the guy, but we can't keep him in a cage, then he can't just say one mean thing, and you're like, okay, we will keep you in the electrified cage indefinitely. Like, no, you still gotta let him out.
I agree. It doesn't really make sense here. But that being said, Tony is locked up and there is complete anarchy. There's a really funny scene. When I say funny, I don't mean I actually laughed out loud. I mean, this must have been unbelievably fun to film. The director must have just been like, throw the maraschino cherries on each other, whipped cream all over yourselves, jello down the pants, and like, they're basically doing the Home Alone slap, but with two slices of pizza on their faces. Paul Feig is rubbing like chocolate syrup on his naked chest. They wake up in, it looks like they woke up from an all-night kegger, but they woke up from an all-night carb fest. It's a drug scene in a Seth Rogen film, but it's all donuts.
It's totally over the top. It's goofy. And then Pat is like, hey, guys, I hope we all learned our lesson. That was too much, and we shouldn't have done that. We are going to lose weight, and we're going to turn this around, and we're going to do it the right way. There's a montage where they're all like, you know, eating healthier and exercising, but not in a crazy way, in a normal way. The nurse character is doing this like lesson where she says, okay, is a tomato a fruit or a vegetable? And the kids say, it's a fruit. And then she's like, oh, yes, that's very good. So today we're going to make pasta primavera. Like, wait a second. How do those two things connect? They don't. Also, pasta primavera? Not the healthiest thing in the world. Yes, I get it that there's veggies, but like, yeah, maybe they don't need pasta right now. They should be cutting back on their carbs.
To be fair, this is 1995, and pasta primavera is probably quote-unquote low fat. So in 1995, that actually probably was the sensible alternative.
Did they have whole wheat pasta back then?
But I don't think that anyone cared about that stuff.
Oh, okay. That thought did cross my mind. I was like, what if they said it's whole wheat pasta primavera? Maybe I would have bought it a little more.
I just feel like the screenwriter wanted to put some kind of like teaching moment in there. And he's like, what's the one fact I remember from high school that was kind of interesting? And I always hated that fact, by the way. Like, do you know a banana is actually a berry, but a strawberry isn't? You know, like one of those stupid things.
Yeah, it's like Linda Richman on Saturday Night Live. Like, a peanut is neither a pea nor a nut. Discuss! Then it is Parents' Day, and all of the parents show up. I did sort of think it was kind of funny when one of the parents is like, none of these kids look any skinnier, you know, like out of like the corner of his mouth. And they don't, which is a little bit weird because you assume that at this point they've been exercising and eating healthy for, I don't know, a week or two. They're not very good at time stamping in this movie, so it's not really clear how long it is. But then like Tony makes this prison break and he like tricks one of the kids and they show all of the parents like this video about like what's really been happening at the camp because they have this cameraman who's been recording all of this footage. And they're like, oh, it's really terrible here. How come you didn't tell us? And all the kids are like, I did try to tell you. You didn't believe me. You just thought I didn't like it here because they were making us diet or whatever.
No. It turns out that all their letters were being intercepted by Tony. Remember when they break into his house?
Yeah, but then one of the kids like call. No, maybe not. So then Tony like shows up. And he like starts doing these like flips around the room. He lands on broken glass with bare feet. And he's like walking around after that like, ooh, it doesn't even bother me.
No, he's purposely stepping on the shards of glass. He's completely bonkers insane at this point.
Whenever I see something like that, I can only think of Die Hard, where John McClane, who's the toughest guy in the world, steps on broken glass and that unbelievably slows him down, because of course it would. And in this movie, it doesn't bother Tony like in the slightest.
No, he's absolutely insane at this point. And he's like, there's nothing you parents can do about it. And then Gerald's father punches him in the face. Then we get the first instance of Ben Stiller playing multiple roles in a film. And he plays Tony Perkis Sr. He's like an older guy in Jersey, wears a tracksuit from head to toe, all right? And Tony Sr. is like, nobody get out there, lawyers or nothing, and we'll give you all your money back, and everybody go away. But then the kids are like, we want to stay, and Sr.'s like, yeah, I don't care, whatever. And he just lets them stay.
Right. And that could have been the end of the movie, but it's not, because then they have to face off against Camp MVP, the evil kids from across the lake, again. They have this series of events, which they call the Apache Relay. Why do they call it an Apache Relay? Because not all of these events are Native American themed.
No. The Apache Relay is still done at my sleepaway camp. The Apache Relay is, it's a camp-wide relay race. That's what it is. And we do this at camp every year. It's a relay race that involves every single kid in the camp. Like, run with the baton to the tennis court. Now you have to bounce the ball like 10 times. Then take the baton over to the archery place. You can't run to the next place until you get at least one bullseye. And now run to the mini golf course and you have to hit a hole in one. And now go to the dock while holding a spoon with an egg in it. That's the Apache Relay. So that part totally makes sense, totally holds up. And they still call it the Apache Relay.
Why?
Because a lot of the sleepaway camps in America are named after Native American names. I don't know if it's the tribe that first settled there, but they do have these names. So I think for the most part, a lot of this stuff has been taken away. Like in this film, the Apache Relay, they're wearing these, what we would call today, racist big chief feather stuff, like for the head counselors. That's not in the Apache Relays in my camp.
But like the kids that we like are wearing those kinds of outfits. The Camp MVP guys are wearing like Greek outfits.
That's true.
Yeah, that's why I was just confused. I'm like, if half of them are Indians and half of them are Greek, why is it the Apache Relay? I also didn't realize that that was a thing that other camps use. So that's on me. But I was very confused by it. I was also confused by just the randomness of some of these events. Some of them are athletic. Some of them are not even a little bit, like shaving a balloon or doing trivia about United States vice presidents.
The trivia one is incredibly stupid because if you don't get it, you're not going to like work your way through it.
No, you know? That's not true, because in this movie, apparently they do, because the good guys take the lead at the trivia part of the contest. And then like all of a sudden right behind them, the bad guys just show up. And I was like, wait, if they couldn't name like the 17th vice president of the United States, he's not going to just suddenly get it.
In the Apache Relays at my camp, they will time you out after a while, specifically for that reason.
Oh, okay.
But the final part of it, which it does make sense in an Apache Relay sort of point of view, and because car racing is a sport of some sorts, it does end on a pretty exciting, the idea is exciting, a go-kart race. And it's Jerry versus some douchey jerk from Camp MVP. And, you know, they give the MVP guy, like, all the pressure's on you. We've never lost this. And the thing that's kind of lame is that there's some button that's in Jerry's go-kart. It's one of these, like, just in case. And it's almost like you'd kind of think, why don't you just hold the turbo button the entire time? It's not like it's NOS gas or something. But Jerry looks at it as the race is coming to a close, and he's like, oh yeah, there's this super button. And he presses it, and he's able to overtake Camp MVP.
Well, he flies over the other guy.
You know, I guess he does use that at the strategic part where he's at some kind of incline.
Yes, but it is also stupid in that Pat, the counselor, has fixed the go-kart, but never tested it out with this kid who's like going to be doing it in the Apache Relay. Like, take him for a test drive. Let him practice on it once or twice.
He literally gave him one test ride once where he pushed a motorless go-kart.
Right. That is not the same. Did the evil camp counselor look familiar to you?
No, no. Who is he?
His name is David Bowie, not David Bowie. It's like that, except without the I. And I recognize him from his role as Bob in the Weird Al movie UHF, which we are definitely going to do in the podcast at some point. But I was like, where do I know this guy from? Oh, yeah, it's a guy from UHF. But anyway, the good guys win. They get the trophy. For some reason, they throw it in the lake, which I didn't really understand. But then the bad guys are like, oh, no, we have to go get it. And they jump in the water and it's like, ha ha, now they're wet. But it's like they were all swimming in the lake before. I just didn't get what the point of that was.
Well, the point to me is obvious. It's just silly. Honestly, why would you want a trophy you didn't win? I'm not saying this in like some like existential thing, but everyone at camp knows they didn't win it. What are they going to like pretend the next year? Like, we're defending. It never happened. It never happened that we lost. We're defending our championship.
I guess so, because in 5 years, all those kids are gone and no one knows and you have the trophy in the trophy case.
Oh, I assumed it was the same cup every year. That's what I assumed.
I don't know. It was pretty dumb. this movie does have a post-credit sequence. I don't know if you noticed
that. I did. I watched through the credits. I also noticed when they said special thanks. Did you notice that by any chance?
No, I didn't.
Now, I thought at first this was unbelievably horrible, but it turns out it's just a bad coincidence. So this was, as you might guess, filmed at an actual sleepaway camp.
Sure.
So, you know, you think special thanks to Camp Shanawanda, something like that. No, they say thanks to Camp Tonawanda, and I go, no way is there a fat camp named Tonawanda. I looked it up. And like the slogan is, it's like, we help young adolescents drive their character. And I'm like, oh my God, this is a euphemism for a fat camp. But no, it's just a regular camp. But it's called Camp Tonawanda.
That's so weird.
Yeah. But I did see there is a post-credit scene, and it involves Ben Stiller's character, Tony Perkis. He is now a sleazy door-to-door salesman trying to sell some like jewelry. Oh, crystals
yeah,
out of a briefcase.
Right, which doesn't stand the test of time because there are no door-to-door salesmen anymore. I mean, maybe in some parts of the country?
No, but crystals definitely stand the test of time.
Yes, as a new age gobbledygook thing that people waste money on, yes. But I assume people buy those in stores and online, not from door-to-door salesmen.
You're correct, but had this been remade today, the post-credit scene, he'd be in a mall kiosk. Not a mall store.
Right.
He'd be the sleazy kiosk guy trying to get, you know, the teenage girls. Hey, girls, you want a crystal that will help balance your chi?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, James, I gotta ask you, what about Heavyweights does and does not stand the test of time?
I thought this film was going to be a lot cringier than it turned out to be. There really weren't that many fat jokes at the kids' expense, which I thought was nice. I think the child actors are, for the most part, all very charming, and they have good chemistry together because I really think they probably got along well offset. I think that the structure of the first two acts for this genre, I think they're pretty perfect. I think it's a kid that's down on his luck and he starts making friends. They get beaten by Camp MVP and there's slow progression. The Tony Perkis character is really funny. I really liked him. The Lars character, not so much. I kept thinking of Camp Krusty a lot, a famous Simpsons episode.
Yeah.
And there's a lot in this film that's funny and good. And I think it completely falls apart in the third act. I think there's actually a way for this film to have stood out and be a little different than The Mighty Ducks and Little Giants and The Big Green and all of those. I thought there was really a good opportunity for these kids because there's a scene when Pat and Jerry because Pat's a heavier counselor and they're like, I just wish once I could be a winner like MVP. And I thought that was actually a very sweet scene because I had felt like that a little bit at 12 years old. Like, I wish I was that perfect guy that's always winning. I thought there's a lot good there, but they just don't have the turnaround. I feel like the answer is staring at them. Why do these kids only succeed at the stupid shaving balloon stuff? The go-kart, I think it's a kind of exciting ending and a realistic ending, but why couldn't they be good at archery and mini golf? And, you know, these kids actually can be athletic. No, don't have them beat them at the climbing the wall. That's fine. But the sack race, these kids, like, they're falling over themselves. These kids aren't completely uncoordinated. But the big problem is that Heavyweights doesn't have a good Act 3 in it. So, unfortunately, it kind of falls apart. And for me, it doesn't stand the test of time. What do you think, Al? Heavyweights, 1995, does this movie stand the test of time?
Well, I agree with you that the third act is complete lunacy. But I disagree with you that the first two acts are, using your word, perfect.
And I said for this genre.
Yeah, it's not perfect in any way with any qualifier on that. I noticed that I said a certain phrase a couple of times while we were talking about this movie. I said over the top. And I get it that it's a kid's movie and kids' movies can be over the top and you can have an over the top villain and whatever. But even Tony himself, I think, says that when Tony like reveals himself during the parents' weekend, he's like, oh, great story, but the villain was a little over the top. A little over the top? A lot over the top. And that bothered me. And yet, there really isn't a good moral. There's not a good lesson here where they should learn from their mistakes and actually decide, yeah, you know what? We are going to eat healthier and we are going to do a little bit more exercise and we want to do it the right way. They could have planned the movie so that at the end when they were filming, the kids did look a little skinnier. You know, you don't need to have them lose a ton of weight. And obviously there's a lot of very restrictive laws about child actors. But, you know, even if they just looked a little slimmer, I think that would have gone a long way to helping sell the fact that, yeah, they turned it around. We really don't get that. We have them find out how to make pasta primavera, and that's about it. The kids themselves don't decide to eat healthier. That's the coach Pat who tells them that they need to. I just feel like there really should have been something about, yeah, Tony was a jerk, but he did have a couple of good points, and we really should try to be healthier. And the movie could have made some kind of point with a capital P or had like a message with a capital M, and it really just kind of blows the opportunity. For what? To have them beat the other kids from the other camp? Why? It's such an unnecessary ending. It's just very poorly constructed, and I do not think this movie stands the test of time. I think were they to remake this movie, they would have much more of a definitive point about getting healthy and the right ways to get healthy and the wrong ways to get healthy. Don't starve yourself. Yes, you are still a wonderful person and you're perfect just the way you are. You don't need to change your personality, but hey, you should be a little healthier. I really feel like this movie is a missed opportunity. So I think it does not stand the test of time, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree with you. I still think it could have been a lot worse, and I think they could have made a lot of more fat jokes and all that stuff, and they didn't.
I agree, but saying a movie could have been a lot worse is not a ringing endorsement.
No. It does have a charm, though. That doesn't deliver a message. That's what I think of this film.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to do it for us this week. Join us next week when we will be talking about Primal Fear. In the meantime, you know where we are. Our website is testoftimepod.com. Talk to us at Test of Time Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Write us a review on Apple Podcasts. Do it now. Don't say you'll do it later because you're going to forget. Do it now. Also, you know what else you can do? Talk to a friend in real life, like a person-to-person conversation, and say, hey, you know what's a good podcast? The Test of Time. That helps get the word out. We appreciate that. We do this for ourselves. We do it for fun, but we want to share it with more people. So thank you for listening, and we will see you next time, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.